You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
This is CBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Jonathan Schanzer, Vice President of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, to help me understand the very, very challenging map of the Middle East now, with threats, with capabilities, with violence, with rockets and drones. Jonathan, welcome. I add a complication since last we spoke. The confirmation that Sergei Shoigu, the national security advisor to President Putin, or a team of advisors to President Putin, is in Tehran or has been in Tehran for ceremonies, including visiting the new president of Iran, but also to talk about arms shipments. The reason I note this especially is because in the early part of the Ukraine war, Iran was keen to emphasize that they were just the Home Depot for drones, and that any drones showing up in Ukraine, and they did quickly, were purchased cash and carry by Russia. We're not linked with them. I believe that pretense is gone. And to note that this is the first instance I can remember of a major Russian delegation and figure. Shoigu has been mentioned as a possible successor. We're not looking at a lightweight here. A major figure visiting Tehran and talking to the regime prior to any violence in the Middle East and after the vow of revenge. Do you find this significant, or is Shoigu just a traveling salesman to all of us? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, I believe this is significant. For some time, we have been talking about an axis that has formed between the Chinese Communist Party, Putin's Russia, and Iran. This has always been the case. It's been an uneasy alliance between these three revisionist powers, and Iran is, of course, the junior power among the three, China being, I think, the most powerful, and Russia being somewhere in between. But I think the Russians right now have been called to Tehran because the Iranians know that if they do strike Israel, and they are planning to do so in the coming hours or days or perhaps weeks, that there will be a significant Israeli response. And what they're asking for right now are defensive weapons, namely, I think, S-300s primarily, air defense systems that would prevent Israeli strikes on Iranian assets as a response to whatever the attack will be out of Iran. I think the big question right now, in my mind, is whether these systems will hold up under an Israeli counterstrike. This is actually very interesting for the United States. It's an interesting test of the Russian systems, given that we're probably looking at American weaponry that will be used in Iran if the Israelis, in fact, do strike back. So there's a good bit of drama going on right here. I've not heard anything about offensive weaponry thus far. But of course, as you mentioned, there is already a pre-existing relationship between the Russians and the Iranians, where the Iranians have been providing significant numbers of drones to the Russians. And that has been one of the primary weapons of that war that the Russians have been waging in Ukraine. So a doubling down on the alliance, if you will, and some very interesting drama taking place rather publicly right now, which is a bit new as far as this war is concerned.
You flag that Russia has an arsenal and Iran has an arsenal. But I recall a couple of weeks ago, I believe we mentioned that Russia was threatening to deploy anti-ship missiles to the Houthis, who are part of the Ring of Fire. So that moment suggests to me that the Russians might be willing to use anti-ship missiles in their barter with Iran as well. I don't believe that the Israeli capabilities are limited to air only. They have a capable navy, and let's put it this way, the Iranian naval defense is slight, not profound. Russia being in this all the way, that's the powers, Jonathan. Does that change the map, Russia being part of the adversary?
I think that all of this is significant right now, in the sense that, you know, we've been worried about it since the war broke out in the Middle East on October 7th, because there was already a war happening in Ukraine. What we're looking at is steadily, not quite there entirely, but I think we are heading in the direction of a more global conflict. The Russians are very openly challenging the U.S. world order. They are openly siding with an enemy of Israel. It's interesting, though, the Russians are apparently trying to guide the Iranians to only strike at military targets. This is their way of, I suppose, justifying their involvement here, saying that they do not welcome attacks on Israeli civilians. That appears to be, according to my sources right now, that does appear to be the strategy that Iran has adopted on the recommendation of the Russians. But again, their involvement here should be deeply troubling to all of us. If you have one more entity get involved, and then we see the Chinese get involved more heavily, then yes, we are looking at a much more global conflict in nature, and that is something that I think none of us truly want to see.
I go then to the threat by the Ayatollah over the corpse, I believe, of the slain Hamas gangster in Tehran. The threat was made directly, we will attack you directly. That struck me as odd. All these years, Iran has used surrogates in order to not have deniability, but some distance from the conflict, mano a mano, or as Slim Pickens said in Dr. Strangelove, two big dogs going to fight. Okay. But they've stayed back from that for years purposefully. What made them go over the line, Jonathan?
Well, you know, John, it's a good question. And I think we need to start by just looking at what happened back on April 13th and 14th of this year. The Israelis had taken out a senior IRGC general who had been based in a building near the Syrian embassy, or the Iranian embassy in Syria, rather. And after that strike, we saw Iran unleash more than 300 drones and missiles at Israel. Obviously, CENTCOM, if we recall, deployed its air defenses. The Israelis deployed their air defenses. Eight missiles and drones got through. Minimal damage was recorded, but that was really the first time that the Iranian regime decided to drop the pretense, came out from behind all of the proxies that it had been using to wage war against Israel for decades, as I think you rightly note. So right now, in the aftermath of Israel's daring assassination of Ismail Haniyeh in the heart of Tehran, Iran has said that they need to respond, that this felt like a direct attack on Iran itself. Of course, there was no intent to actually do damage to any assets that belonged to Iran. It was just simply one of the Hamas leaders who was there attending the inauguration of the new Iranian president. But nevertheless, this is where we are. It obviously came right at the same time or within hours of Israel taking out a senior Hezbollah leader in Beirut. And apparently there was an IRGC advisor who was also with Fuad Shukr, the man who was killed in Beirut. So I think the Iranians have a beef at this point, and they feel the need to start to settle some scores. I think they may be getting in a bit too deep here, John, in my view. I think the Israelis, from what I've heard, have a significant set of strike packages prepared. They're being asked by the United States to hold fire, to not engage preemptively. But I think as soon as the first missile or rocket or drone hits, the Israelis have plans to strike in Iran directly and to do damage to assets that belong to the regime. They also have plans to strike Hezbollah, which is expected right now to fire on Israel out of Lebanon, perhaps at the same time or perhaps in a staggered manner. Either way, the Israelis are loaded for bear. They are ready for whatever is to come. And I think the Iranian axis will very likely pay a high price.
What is known publicly about the U.S. involvement? You've mentioned there are conversations between leadership. You've mentioned that there's equipment moving to Israel. But is the U.S. involved in intelligence gathering, in satellite technology, anything like that? What do we know, Jonathan?
Well, there is intense intelligence sharing between the Israelis and the United States. And so I have no doubt that information is being shared. We know that Defense Minister Yoav Gallant is in touch with Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense. They're speaking quite often, but that's just at the highest levels, right? There's a whole lot going on at the bureaucratic level, Mossad to CIA, Amman to DIA. They're, all the agencies are certainly working together, sharing intelligence, trying to figure out what Iran may be moving into place in order to fire upon Israel. I personally believe, by the way, that intelligence, perhaps provided by the U.S., perhaps that the Israelis gleaned on their own, has actually prevented the first couple of rounds or attempts by Iran to strike Israel, that there were weapon systems that were interdicted along the border of Syria and Lebanon. Israel struck a number of targets. Not a lot has been made public about those, but that happened a few days ago, and I think that was perhaps part of a plan that Iran had tried to execute but failed. So I think intelligence may actually be forestalling the expected strike from the Iranians. They may have tried to move something quite dangerous close to Israel that Hezbollah would have been able to fire. That failed, so we may now be seeing some of that longer range stuff along the lines of what we saw on April 13th and 14th.
Jonathan Shanzer, Vice President of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. We're going to the north of Israel, the threat from Beirut. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.